Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to another week of Drive Time Sports here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy as always to be along with you on the afternoon drive, and it's a brand new week, and we have a lot of local sports to talk about. So, as far as baseball goes, the Emory Spartans are still alive. They did drop one of two games over the weekend, but they did win one, so they're still in the hunt for a 2A state championship. Tomorrow, we're going to catch up with Coach Sean Alton and talk about that. But a little bit later, we'll go over the details of the two games from this past weekend. But as far as Emory High School athletics go, today we're going to talk a lot about the soccer team. They wrapped up the 2017 season last week. I love Coach Troy Winter and this Emory soccer team. They've been so much fun to follow, and they have taken such huge steps in such short time. They finished second in the region, a one-goal loss to Summit Academy in the first round of the playoffs last week. We're going to talk to Coach Troy Winter about that. Really looking forward to this interview. And now that the dust has settled on the NFL draft, you kind of get an opportunity to take a step back, breathe. Don't panic if your team didn't do exactly what you wanted them to do. You've had a chance to look at things and dissect it. We're going to talk NFL football a little bit later on in the show with Brian Mejia, good friend of mine, and our Drive Time Sports NFL insider. So that's what we have on tap for tonight. Let's take a look at some of the latest headlines. Now, the Toronto Raptors, who I was extremely disappointed in the Eastern Conference playoffs, their season is over with. They suffered a sweep at the hands of the Cavaliers. And I'm not disappointed that they lost to Cleveland, because I didn't think they would beat the Cavs. But I thought they were geared up, fully equipped to actually make a push and make a series out of it. You know, I thought maybe 6-7 games. Had an opportunity to win two games, couldn't do it. This was after going out and acquiring Serge Ibaka earlier on in the season. It just seemed like this was a team that was built to push the Cavs. Now there's some questions looming in Toronto, and their star point guard, Kyle Lowry, who's one half of an all-star backcourt with DeMar DeRozan, confirmed that he will opt out of his contract and become an unrestricted free agent this summer. This is according to Mark Stein. The move wasn't necessarily a shock. Lowry, who's 31, was terrific in 2016-2017, averaged 23 points, 7 assists, nearly 2 steals per game, and he shot 41% from the field. And he was only set to make $12 million next year. Now he has an opportunity to get a max contract from the Raptors, and I don't know if the Raptors will give it to him. Because at what point in time do you look at your roster and you say, we are not good enough? He can sign a 5-year, $205 million deal with the Raptors. Other teams can only offer him 4 years at around $152. I don't know if the max contract's his priority. That he hasn't made clear. He wants a championship. He's going to have all kinds of options. The Raptors, they would go way beyond the luxury tax if they were to re-sign him and Serge Ibaka, who's also a free agent. They're not going to bring back the same group. There's no possible way. They just got swept. Why would you bring back the same group? I tell you what, if I'm a Utah Jazz fan, and I know their season's not over yet, and we'll talk about that in just a bit, I'd have my eyes on Kyle Lowry. He's a guy I'd max out if I was a Jazz. $152 million contract? I'd think about it. If you're able to bring back Gordon Hayward, I would think about it if I was the Jazz. You'd have to move on and do some maneuvering from a couple of players. But man, having a point guard like that in the backcourt with Rodney Hood, with Gordon Hayward, Rudy Gobert, I'd keep my eye on Kyle Lowry if I was the Utah Jazz. If a ring is what he wants, there's a good chance that maybe San Antonio would be an option. They'd have to move on from Pau Gasol. They'd also have to move on from Tony Parker. It's possible. I don't know. This is an interesting storyline already to follow. When teams are ousted in the NBA playoffs, there's all kinds of speculation that builds up. But this is so interesting because I think Lowry would fit in so many different spots in the NBA. Let's move on and continue with the NBA, but move on from the Toronto Raptors. Nene Hilario, also known as Nene, just Nene, out for the playoffs after an adductor tear. Bad news for Houston. Very bad news. Series is tied 2-2. The Rockets medical staff is currently reviewing treatment options, but it looks as if he is going to be done for the postseason. He's averaging 10 points, 5 boards in about 18 minutes per game, serving as the team's backup behind Capella, who's been great this postseason. This move hurts Houston more than San Antonio losing Tony Parker. And if you have followed the Houston Rockets and the San Antonio Spurs this year, you know exactly why I say that. Because Patty Mills has been better than Tony Parker consistently throughout the season. Nene has been the glue to a stellar Rockets bench. Really, it's a group that only runs 8 deep. So you bring Nene, Lou Williams, Eric Gordon off of the pine. You're losing a key contributor. This is going to hurt Houston. If they find a way to get past San Antonio, no way will they get past Golden State without, and yes, I said Golden State because the Jazz are toast in that series. No way do they get past Golden State without Nene. Ryan Anderson's going to have to play the five. You can stretch a little bit. Montrezl Harrell could also see some role increase, and that's a problem as well. This is bad news for Houston. Worst case scenario. Let's move on and take a look at the schedule tonight in the NBA. Now, the Jazz could be playing in their final game of the year, which, look, it's been a very successful season for the Utah Jazz, but they will need to win tonight at home in order to prolong the season. 7 o'clock tip-off as they play host to the Golden State Warriors. David Locke, Ron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call right here on KOAL. Tip-off again is at 7, pregame show at 6:50. Actually, that's the only NBA game tonight. So we get one contest tomorrow. We get San Antonio and Houston. That's the only game. We have an if-necessary contest on Wednesday between the Jazz and the Warriors. Let's take a look at the schedule for Major League Baseball. Whole slate of games tonight. Beginning at 5 o'clock, the Giants on the road to take on the New York Mets. Matt Moore going toe-to-toe with Jacob deGrom. The deGrominator has been fantastic this season for New York. Washington is going to be at Baltimore. We get Cleveland at Toronto. Cincy will play host to the Yankees. We get the Cardinals on the road to take on Miami. And Tampa Bay welcomes in Kansas City. All of those games in the 5 o'clock hour. We also get Chicago at Colorado, 6:40 p.m. Jake Arrieta is going to be on the mound tonight for the Cubs. The Angels on the road to take on the A's. And the Dodgers will play host to the Pirates at 8:10. And then Texas at San Diego. It's a quick rundown of everything that's happening in the national sports scene. Again, kind of a slow day for national sports. Coming up on the show, we'll talk some Emory High School soccer. We'll also dive into some NFL football talk as well. It's all coming up here on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. The Emory Spartan baseball team opened up the two-way state championship tournament play on Saturday, and they finished 1-1, but remain alive for a state championship. In the first contest of the afternoon, Emory suffered a 6-3 loss to Summit Academy. The Bears pulled away, scoring 3 runs in the bottom of the third. They added 2 more in the bottom of the fifth to grab the win. The loss for Emory came despite out-hitting Summit Academy 10-9. In the loss, Till Gardner was tagged with it. He went 4 innings, gave up 7 hits and 6 earned runs. Facing elimination, the Spartans answered by easily defeating South Summit 17-6 in the one-loss bracket. Emory took the wire-to-wire win. They scored 4 runs in the first 2 innings and then pulled away for good by scoring 11 runs in the bottom of the fifth to end the contest early. The win means that Emory is still alive for a state championship. They will take on Providence Hall on Thursday. This contest is scheduled to begin at 11 a.m. A loss would bring the season to a close for Emory. A win means they move on to meet either Milford or Enterprise. That'll be later on in the afternoon. The Spartans now have to win a number of games in order to get back to the state championship. But again, it is a possibility. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll be joined later in the week by head coach Sean Alton. We stick with baseball, but we move over to the 3A classification, where Saturday morning the Carbon Dinos ended the regular season with a big 12-1 victory over Sky Ridge. The Dinos were led in this contest by the winning pitcher, which was Zach Bradley. Bradley pitched just a little over three innings. He faced 11 batters and gave up just two hits while recording a couple of strikeouts. The Dinos end the season on a positive note and will now turn their attention to the 3A state championship tournament, which will get underway this Saturday. 5 days away from action, the Dinos will prepare for Desert Hills, the number 2 seed from Region 9. A win for Carbon means that they would more than likely move on and play the host school, Park City, in round 2. A loss would send them into the one-loss bracket and take on a team that is still to be determined from Region 11. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll have more on the Carbon Dino baseball team in the coming days, and we'll catch up with head coach Jeff Cincinnatus. We move over to the junior college baseball ranks, and the Scenic West Athletic Conference Championship is set. And the USU Eastern baseball squad will travel on the road to Southern Nevada, which is in Henderson. And in the opening round, USU Eastern will meet Colorado Northwestern. That'll take place this Thursday. Start time for this game is set for 12 p.m. A win means USU Eastern moves on to play the host school, Southern Nevada, at 3:30 p.m. on the same day. A loss sends them down to the one-loss bracket. And again, this is a true double elimination format. We'll catch up with head coach Scott Mattson in the coming days and preview the Scenic West Athletic Championship Tournament. Speaking of JUCO Championship Tournaments, we move over to women's softball, and the USU Eastern Lady Eagles will participate in their first ever SWAC Conference Tournament. That'll begin Wednesday, and it will be in Salt Lake, as the Salt Lake Community College Bruins easily cruise their way to a league championship. USU Eastern will take on the third team in the conference, which is CSI. Again, this is the first ever conference tournament for the women's softball squad. A win means that they would move on and play the number 2 team in the conference, which is Southern Idaho. The Lady Eagles won just 5 regular season games in conference this year, but they did close out the season this past weekend by splitting with Snow College. And we end by moving over to the national sports scene. Tonight on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, the Utah Jazz will look to keep their season alive as they play host at Golden State in Game 4 of the Western Conference Semis. The Jazz had a terrific chance to win Game 3. However, the Golden State Warriors pulled away late despite sluggish performances from Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. A loss tonight ends the season for the Jazz. Again, David Locke and Ron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Time for a brand new week of the Coach's Corner here on Drive Time Sports. And of course, we're going to be talking a lot of baseball and softball as we gear up for the end of the spring sports season. Last week, the high school soccer season came to a close here in the Castle Country as both Emory and Carbon suffered losses in the opening round of the 2A and 3A state championship tournaments. Joining us right now to talk about the conclusion for the Emory season, we have head coach Troy Winter. Coach, as always, a pleasure. Thank you for taking out the time today.
I really appreciate the time, Jordan. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, always look forward to talking some Emory soccer, Coach. Unfortunately, this time we're wrapping up the 2017 season. We talked to you leading up to the state championship tournament, and unfortunately, the season came to an end in the opening round. A home loss to Summit Academy by a final score of 2-1. A very competitive game, Coach, but unfortunately, we come out on the losing side of things.
It was a very competitive game. The boys played really well. There actually was some good soccer played. They were just Summit Academy was just a touch more aggressive than we were, and just a touch a little bit faster to the ball. But we played really well, and they played well, and you got to hand it to them when they show up and play, away from home, and it's our home field, and they showed up, they gave us a good game, and it was so good to have a home match, and to accomplish some goals and get some of the butterflies out and everything. But yeah, it is unfortunate.
It started out like a typical Emory soccer game, right? I mean, you guys held a 1-0 lead at halftime. That's a situation that you guys have been in countless times throughout the season. I'm sure you felt comfortable going into the second half.
you know, I did. And, you know, when I told the boys, and that was one of the things, I you know, I felt good about the things, you know, for the second half if we made a couple of adjustments. And the couple of adjustments that we had to make was, you know, we had to start winning more 50-50 balls. And then we had to just up our touches and our ball control, you know, and not have any momentary lapses. And, you know, and I really, in all honesty, I felt that we did have that. Other on our second goal, I mean, the second goal got scored within just the first few minutes of the first goal being scored. You know, that momentary lapse right there. Other than that, I still feel like we played, you know, really good soccer and we played really competitive with Summit Academy.
You and I were talking off the cuff, and you mentioned the five-minute rule in soccer, where when one goal is scored, you're vulnerable for another goal within the 5 minutes, and that's what happened. Why is that? Why does the rule of 5 minutes come into play so often?
You know, it's one way or the other. As far as excitement for your own team, your team is just went and scored, and so you're excited and your adrenaline's pumping and you're going, and you go after another one, and the other team's is down, and so they're kind of playing lackadaisical, and it just always seems to go that way. You know, one team's up, one team's down, or vice versa. You know, there's a team that just gets scored on, and it fires them up even more, and so they go down and score right back on you. You know. And stuff to tie it up or whatever and stuff. And, you know, unfortunately, that's what happened with us. You know, we just got a penalty kick. And then we, you know, 5 minutes into, or, you know, actually 2 minutes in, you know, after that goal was scored, you know, they went down and scored on us within just a couple minutes right there. Just a momentary lapse of judgment on our part and, you know, preparation and stuff. So.
Even falling behind 2-1 in this game, did you still feel, and did the kids still have the attitude as if you were going to win this game?
You know, we did. They continued to play hard, and we as coaches, we made a couple of adjustments with players, trying to spark and you know keep things going and keep things moving forward. We had several opportunities. You know, the boys, you know, put the ball into play in several key opportunities. You know, and it was something that we had a problem with earlier in the season, just finding the back of the net. And we just didn't get the ball to bounce our way. You know, several opportunities that we had. So we was there. It just wasn't meant to be this time. So
obviously a disappointing end of the season. Yet these kids still got to play host to a home playoff game. When it was said and done, what was the attitude like around the team?
You know, there obviously was a lot of frustration, you know, because they felt like that they was a better team than that, and they wanted to go out and perform at a higher level and stuff and everything. And you know, and I just let them know that I really honestly felt like they did go out and compete. You know, it's a huge learning curve for us. You know, we're still, I still consider us, you know, in our infancy in this program. I mean, we've been established for 4 years. And for us, you know, in our four-year mark to come out and to host a home playoff game, to have the crowd support and the fan support that we have, and to be a successful soccer team, as successful as we are as a team, that they needed to, you know, to hold their heads high, you know, and once you put, you know, kind of a few of them things in perspective for some of these boys, you know, they realize, you know, this was a huge accomplishment for us. So it was good.
I know the goal is always to win, and I think that's one of the things that gets lost. High school sports, junior high sports, I mean, it doesn't matter. The goal is to win when you go out on the court or you go out on the field. But, Coach, it's got to be a lot easier to accept a loss knowing that your kids gave 100%.
You know, and I'm glad you said that, because that's always been my number one rule as a coach is I can handle, you know, if we get beat by a team that's better than us, you know, or as a coach not preparing well enough, you know, or whatever, I can handle that. But if you don't go out and you don't give me 100%, and you don't walk off the field with your head held high, knowing that you give 100% and you've done everything that you could do as a player, as an athlete, then, yeah, that's a little frustrating to me. And I know every one of them boys, you know, and that was the last thing I told them. I said, if there's any one of you here that didn't give me 110%, then let's do some laps. And there wasn't one boy there that felt that way, because they did give 110%.
So. I get it. Again, our guest right now is Coach Troy Winter of the Emory Spartan Soccer Squad. Coach, we'll talk about the future of this program. I mean, you and I talked about this last time out. The seniors on this year's squad have really set the tone. And when we look back 10 to 12 years from now, I think you'll be able to point to this senior group as the group of kids that propelled this program to the next level. How important in your mind is the senior class, and how difficult is it going to be to replace this group of kids?
You know, it's going to be extremely difficult. There's a lot of heart with these boys. You know, a lot of them, you know, don't have, you know, they're not the upperclassmen as far as skill level, as far as what other teams might experience as far as soccer players and playing for years and years. But we have a lot of heart and a lot of dedication, and this senior class is going to be really, really hard, you know, to replace. But they've given some goals to the younger guys and given, you know, a standard that they want to be kept and, you know, want to be met and stuff, you know, throughout the next 5, 10 years. And so it's going to be really interesting. And I think, you know, we have the program as such that, you know, these younger players looked up to the senior class and to these older boys right now. And I think that they'll continue to perform and to fight and to do them proud as well, too.
Yeah, it's kind of the gift and the curse of high school sports, right? Starting over every year.
It is. It's funny that you say that. It's you know, losing in the playoffs is, you know, it's the final whistle there, and then, you know, when does the season start for next year? Well, the season starts for next year, you know, this weekend. You know, we go and do some things this weekend, so you know, we're right back on it, you know, and stuff, and it is. It's hard to. It's so hard to say goodbye, you know, to what we have, but obviously to continue to build our program, you know, we have to move forward. And, you know, and as we visit with the seniors and as we have our banquet and stuff, you know, our seniors are going to know, you know, how much and how valuable they have been to our program and what they mean to our program. So
if we look at the 2A bracket, Coach, Millard, Layton Christian, and then ALA and South Summit, those are the final four teams. And I asked you this off the cuff if there were any surprises, and you said no. Millard and South Summit really stand out to you.
They do. They do. You know, I've only watched a couple of their games on film, and they've got a good program in place and stuff, and the strength of their programs right now are, you know, with these next few years and stuff where they've been building and working and stuff, and then they're playing good soccer. They're playing really good soccer, and, you know, that's why, you know, part of me is really disappointed. I really wanted to go down, and I thought Millard would be a really good test for us. But I really wanted to go down and see, you know, see where we stood. We played them in seasons past, and, you know, been competitive, and you know, so I wanted to, you know, good leverage to see, you know, where we are and stuff, you know, with the other teams, with the other rural program teams and stuff as well, too, and Millard would have been a good test. South Summit has some awesome soccer players up there. You know, I've been involved with them, you know, in some club stuff, and they have some really good soccer players, so it's going to be an interesting semifinals for sure.
If we look ahead to next season, Coach, things change up a little bit. Emory goes from a 2A school up to the 3A classification. You guys will share Region 15 with some familiar opponents, Grand, Manti, South Sevier, San Juan, but also Manti and Richfield. Manti, a very competitive 2A soccer squad. You guys had a couple of battles with them this season. Richfield is moving from 3A, well, they're staying 3A, but you guys will be moving up to join them. So a little bit of a different feel next year.
You know, it will be. It'll be kind of interesting to see how things go and stuff. And, you know, and I really still feel, you know, us moving up into that 3A region, I really still feel that we can be competitive and we should be competitive. You know, our off-season work and, you know, and stuff, I really still think that we'll be competitive with them teams. And I'm looking forward to that because, you know, as a lot of people say, you know, to get better, you know, you have to play better teams. You have to go out there and, you know, and do that and stuff. So it'll be a good test for us. So
last question before I let you go, Coach. If you had to look back on the 2017 season, what's that one crowning achievement for this team? Is there an individual moment that stands out to you?
You know, as far as an individual moment, you know, nothing that I can really think of off the top of my head. You know, just in light of all the things that have happened with our family and with my boy Ethan and stuff, his team has really stepped forward and shared in his heart and his love of the game and have played, you know, soccer, have played Emory High soccer and stuff. And so, you know, I think as far as the the highlight moment is just the way these boys have played, the way this team has come together. Something like that could either drive a team away or really get some good bonds and some good friendships and stuff. And we've developed that lifelong skills that I think will help us throughout our lives, not just on the soccer field. So.
Well, there's something special about high school athletics, Coach. I tell people this all the time, especially high school athletics in smaller towns. And if it's not something that you've ever gotten into or watched, I mean, I invite people all the time to please check it out, because there's just something unique about small town high school athletics.
I agree wholeheartedly that there's heart, desire, just the competitive nature, the love of the game, whatever game it is that we're playing, here in Emory High School, there's just, whatever sport we play, whether it be football or basketball or baseball or soccer, they love what they do, and we're extremely competitive, and we want to represent our school as well, and there's a lot of team unity and a lot of team pride and community pride, and it's probably, as far as the counting, for my life, it is so much fun to be part of, this community and this program and this school, to be honest with you. I love it. So,
Coach, it's been fun to follow the team throughout the year. Thank you so much for always taking out the time. And I know we'll talk to you during the off season and get some updates on the team.
Yes, absolutely. I love that. And again, I really appreciate all your, all your time and, just the recognition of these players and the support that we have from our fans and, from our parents and from these players and the hard work that they put in. And for you giving me the time, it's such a pleasure, and I really appreciate it so very much.
Oh, I look forward to it every week, Coach. Thank you again, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, awesome. Thank you much. I appreciate it.
We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up right after this. We'll move over to the national scene. We'll talk some NFL football.
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Real name, no gimmicks.
On 750 AM, KOAL.
So I came to the grave. Real name, no gimmicks. That's why I ain't got no.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL, 107.3 FM, 750 AM. The aftermath of the NFL draft. Things are starting to settle down just a little bit. And now you've had an opportunity to look at some of the selections that your favorite team made. And I tell this to every fan, I guarantee within 3 years, there is a player selected by your team that you will hate within the next 3 years. Guaranteed, it's just the way it works. Let's talk about some of the selections and some of the aftermath of the NFL draft with our next guest. He's kind enough to join us on the show regularly. We have Brian Mejia, based out of Los Angeles, our Drive Time Sports NFL insider. Brian, it's been a while, but it is great to get you back on. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, it's been crazy. It's been a crazy week in the NFL and, everywhere here in Los Angeles with two teams drafting out of here. But I definitely think that it was a good draft. It was an entertaining draft. And, the NFL gives you its best at this time of the year, and it beat up the NBA in ratings, of course.
Yeah, the NFL draft has really become a spectacle, and I think the NFL has done a good job of embracing that. I mean, if you just watch rounds 2 through 7, you see the nuances that they've added to it, the excitement that they've added to it, letting people come up and announce the pick. You saw the festival in Philadelphia, the way the fans reacted to that. It was insane. It was like a concert. It was like Coachella. I think that's a fair comparison. Somebody said that on Twitter. The NFL turned the draft into Coachella. Unlike anything I've ever seen, Brian.
It was awesome, wasn't it? I feel like Philadelphia should get another knock, be a host city, maybe in the next year, maybe or two if we don't get it here in Los Angeles. But Philadelphia did an awesome job in hosting the draft, and I think they should get it back as soon as possible.
Let's start by talking about some of the selections. Now, earlier the NFL came out and they said that the league would not be able to discipline Gerrion Conley, the 24th overall pick by the Oakland Raiders, based on the fact that he had gotten in trouble before he was under investigation before his association with the NFL. Brian, this is a hot topic. It's something that has been discussed. There were a lot of individuals with questionable backgrounds selected in this draft. A lot of them. Not just Gerrion Conley. I think that Conley is getting the majority of the attention here based on the fact that that he went in the first round. But you have DeeDee Westbrook. You have Joe Mixon. You have a lot of these guys who have questionable backgrounds at the moment. Give me your take on these guys being selected and on if you would stay away from somebody with this kind of character if you're an NFL team. I want your take on it.
I think I draw the line with domestic violence. in terms of Joe Mixon, but then again, the kid did it a couple years ago, and I don't think, I think everybody deserves a second chance.
Sure.
You know, I'm one of those people that believes in second chances. The NFL is a league that doesn't tolerate those things if you're in their club already. Now, like they said, and technically they are right when they say Gary and Connolly isn't going to serve any suspension or any, you know, nothing's going to happen to him. He's going to be able to come into the National Football League as a drafted player because he wasn't part of an NFL team. He was not part of the NFL when this incident happened. Now, is it fair? Well, technically it is. Is it right? Well, I mean, they always try to put their foot down on anything that they can control in terms of the NFL, and this is something that they feel that happened before that Gary came into the league, and obviously it did, but, you know, it's definitely something that we should look at a little harder in terms of, you know, who actually watches the NFL in terms of, you know, women, children, you know, men of all ages, anything. I think everybody should take a look at this and see there's something wrong in the system here. I mean, if you're going to preach, you know, Roger Goodell and the NFL, they're going to preach that, you know, no to domestic violence, no to anything like that. I think they should have a thorough investigation, and maybe they should have put these guys on the NFI list. You know, hey, they're going to start their NFL career, but they're on the NFI list to start. Maybe it would have, you know, put their draft stock down or whatnot. You know, but there's just so many things that are happening right now in terms of that, in terms of these players coming out of college. They're very highly ranked players, and, you know, it's something that I feel that, you know, they really have to regulate a little better. But at the same time, like I said, the technicality is that these guys are, you know, they're coming into the NFL with a fresh start, and they do deserve a second chance.
No, I agree with that, and I do believe that Gary and Conley's situation is a little bit different. You are innocent until proven guilty. And I'm a firm believer on that in the Gary and Conley situation. However, speaking of the pick, the Raiders are in, and I know you follow the Raiders extremely close, so I'm going to get your opinion on this. I view it as if the Raiders are extremely close. They're extremely close to giving New England a run for their money and getting a trip to the Super Bowl. With that 24th pick, there were safer options available for a team that is this close. And I think a mishap in the first round of this draft could set this team back for what they're ultimately trying to accomplish. With that being said, I would not have gone with Gary and Conley. I would have went with Reuben Foster. I know there's some question marks there as well. Because of that, Brian, and the Raiders have done well in the draft, but I think a lot has gone their way in the draft. Reggie McKenzie's job, I believe, may just be tied to Gary and Conley. I really think that if things go haywire with this pick, Mark Davis has the avenue. He has the ability to sit back and say, you know what? This was your call. It's now your mess. And he's tied to Gary and Conley.
Exactly. And Mark Davis signed off on the pick. He's the one that, you know, that said we should go all defense in the draft. And they did just that, except for one pick. But I agree with you. I think he is tied to Gary and Connolly now, and his job should be on the line because, you know, you have a window to win a Super Bowl. This looks like a team that can compete with the New England Patriots for the AFC title. And it looks like this is the team that's going to be doing that this year. I feel like, you know, with adding Marshawn and, you know, having a good draft. I know Gary and is, you know, if he didn't have these off-field issues, he probably wouldn't have been at 24.
No, he wouldn't have.
Probably would have gotten in the top 15.
Sure.
So, you know, having him, you know, makes your football team a lot better, but there's always that chance that you're not going to have him because of the allegations that are going on. So, you know, if everything clears out, then Reggie McKenzie's good. I mean, I think he's going to be okay, even if he's not the top corner of the draft. But I think if he's a solid pro and he stays with the Raiders for the next, you know, 7 to 10 years, I think he's somebody that we're going to look back at and say, hey, Reggie took that chance, he got it done, and if they win the championship in Oakland or Las Vegas and Connolly's one of the best players on the team, we're going to look back and say, hey, that was a great pick by Reggie McKenzie, but, you know, obviously we have to see what's going to materialize in the next couple of years.
Right, and I think the NFL draft in general is a crapshoot. So the Raiders rolled the dice. We'll see just how this plays out, no doubt about it. But it's an interesting storyline nonetheless. Another interesting storyline, Brian, that we can talk about here, the Denver Broncos bringing in Jamaal Charles. You and I had talked at the beginning of free agency, And I thought a perfect spot for Jamaal Charles would be Pittsburgh, because I thought he could spell Le'Veon Bell. He cannot be a featured back. I don't believe his knees have that ability for him to take 25 to 30 carries a game. Instead, he chooses Denver. And it's a similar situation in my mind. He doesn't spell C.J. Anderson. He doesn't spell Devontae Booker. But now the Denver Broncos have made a move in that AFC West where they will alleviate some of the pressure off their downright mediocre quarterback situation by bringing in Jamaal Charles.
Yeah, definitely. And Jamaal, if healthy, he's one of the best, you know, pass-catching backs out of the backfield. I think he's going to be a third-down back for them. You know, I think that's the role that can suit him well in Denver, and I think that's what they're looking for, you know, at the Broncos. I think Mike McCoy is going to use him pretty well, and I feel like, you know, Jamaal in the AFC West, he knows the teams in the division. He knows the Chiefs, knows the Raiders, knows the Chargers, playing for the Broncos now, so I feel like he's going to be okay there. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think that was the most lucrative offer that he received, and I think Denver was waiting until after the draft to get somebody like that because, you know, you get a cheap replacement in the draft, a cheap third down back in the draft, and that's something that the Broncos looked at, and they got Jamaal Charles out of it, a 29-year-old back that I think has a couple, like a year or two left in the tank. I wouldn't say Jamal's just about done, but, you know, he's not the same guy that he used to be, obviously.
Between now and the start of the preseason, I know that's a ways off. We're talking about 3 months, but what's the best storyline to follow, Brian, in the NFL?
Well, one of the ones that I personally have been looking at is how is Jared Goff going to look in the minicamp, at the start of OTAs, you know, at the start of training camp? How is he going to look between now and then? Because, you know, obviously last year people weren't too, you know, thrilled with how he looked on the field. But I wonder how he's going to look under Sean McVay. That's something you got to look at, because what the Rams did this year, they gave up the fifth pick in the draft to the Titans for his services. So, you know, the microscope is going to be on him. And obviously the Jacksonville Jaguars as well. Blake Bortles, is he going to be a guy that's going to be remembered as a top three pick that was, you know, a complete bust? And then the Jamarcus Russell, Ryan Leaf, you know, way of thinking? Or is he going to be a guy that can rebound and make something good out of his career? That's something that I personally have been looking at, because I know a thing or two about bad quarterbacks, Jordan, and I think that, you know, Jared, I have some hope for, and I feel like I think it was more about his you know, the people around him, the team around him, and the play calling. I think that had something to do more with his lack of production. But Blake has had it all, and I feel if he can't get anything done, especially with Leonard Fournette now, I think his career is just about done, and he's going to be a prominent backup in the NFL.
Well, I can talk about Jared Goff here for a moment, because don't forget, he's a Jeff Fisher guy. Jeff Fisher is no longer there. I think another bad season or poor production from what the Rams have brought in, and Les Snead could be on his way out. Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if Jared Goff is absolutely horrible in year two, and Les Snead does in fact lose his job, there's no ties between Jared Goff and Sean McVay, and next year's draft class is projected to be quite heavy in the quarterback situation, and the Rams would be able to move on from Jared Goff. I don't think they would have a problem doing that, knowing that a new regime is in. I think this is a crucial year for Goff. I like that storyline as well.
I do too, and a guy that everybody around the league and everybody's talking about is Sam Darnold, that he's going to be the next Andrew Luck or the next great quarterback that's going to come out of the draft, the next John Elway. That's what they're saying now about this kid. He's going to be up next year, so we got to see how these teams are going to position themselves to draft a guy like that.
I think you got two L.A. kids. You can't forget about Josh Rosen as well out of UCLA. I think both of them are going to be very good NFL quarterbacks. They have the skill set for it.
Oh, most definitely. I forgot about Josh because, you know, right now Sam Darnold's the talk of the town.
Right, right. Absolutely. Brian, it's always great to get you on and talk some NFL football. I appreciate you taking out some time in your busy schedule. Always fun. Thank you.
Always fun, buddy. You have a good one. We'll talk soon.
Absolutely. We're going to take a break for just a moment. We do have some more Drive Time Sports coming up right after this.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
Back to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM 750 AM. Let's talk Utah Jazz basketball. Tonight, there's a great chance that the season will come to a close. I said at the beginning of the series, I thought that maybe the Jazz could take the Series 5. Would not be surprised if it actually was a sweep, but I thought the Jazz could get one. The one I thought they would get was Saturday. I thought there was a great chance that they could win Game 3. Obviously, that didn't happen. And looking at that game, I think it did present the best chance for the Jazz to get a win. I mean, Klay Thompson and Steph Curry were not good in this game. And the Jazz had the lead late into the contest. But the fact is, when you stop Curry and you stop... Klay was 1 of 9 in this game. And I'm going to say you stopped Klay Thompson. Steph got 23, but it was a volume 23. He had to shoot 20 times to get it. You did your job on Steph. Kevin Durant was phenomenal in this game, and he's playing with a chip on his shoulder. I was invited on Fox Sports with Chris Plank Saturday night following this game, and I was asked what the atmosphere is like in Utah now that the Jazz are back in the postseason, and they're competitive once again. I mean, so obviously, people across the country are starting to take note, that this Jazz team is back and they're competitive. It's been a good year for the Jazz. I'm not being disrespectful or talking down on this team when I say they are just not good enough. Because I don't think anybody in the league is good enough to beat Golden State in a 7-game series this year. Too much firepower. And I was also asked about the Rudy Gobert and the Kevin Durant situation on if Kevin Durant should have been thrown out of the game. And my answer to that is no. Absolutely not. I like the fact that there's pushing and shoving. I love the fact that Rudy Gobert is shoving Kevin Durant down low. I love that. Because again, the Delta Center, now Vivint, used to be a place nobody wanted to go. You knew when you went to the Delta Center, you were going to get roughed up by Karl Malone. Karl Malone was nasty. Borderline dirty ball player. And you had to love that about Malone, right? It was the same with John Stockton. He would body you up. Stockton was a physical defender. I think the Jazz lacked that for a very long time. Deron Williams and Carlos Boozer, that unit was soft. I don't think this Jazz team is soft. I think they desperately miss George Hill, who adds a different kind of mentality to this unit defensively. But I love that Gobert is shoving Kevin Durant down low. I love it. Kevin Durant picked up a flagrant foul in this game because Rudy Gobert was playing him physical down low, shoving him and throwing elbows. I like that. Yet a team like Golden State, they're cocky, they're good. One of the best teams that we have seen, I think, in quite some time in the league. And the Jazz didn't back down. They've played Golden State tough in aspects of all three games. I do believe the series comes to a close tonight. No shame in this season for the Jazz. It's a step in the right direction. And I think because of it, Gordon Hayward sticks around long term. And I think other free agents will start to view Utah as an attractive destination. This was a season that will go a long way for the future of the Utah Jazz. Running out of time on this edition of the show, we'll talk about a couple of other items. The big fight this past Saturday between Canelo and Chavez Jr. It was a snooze fest. Canelo walks his way through it. If you missed it, and you've missed the Vince McMahon type storyline, something to talk about a little bit later on in the week. We will get Canelo and Triple G going toe-to-toe. That's the fight everybody wants. Gennady Golovkin and Canelo Alvarez going toe-to-toe in September. It is the biggest fight in boxing. The biggest fight that the sport could make. Even though we've talked heavyweights with Joshua and Wilder, this is the biggest fight that boxing could make post-Floyd Mayweather era. I'm glad we're getting it. And we'll talk horse racing a little bit later on in the week. To no surprise, I'm going to say it's to no surprise, Always Dreaming has already been shipped to Pimlico. They wanted him, Todd Pletcher, his trainer, wanted him shipped immediately to prepare for the Preakness, which is going down on May 20th. And of course, whenever someone wins the Kentucky Derby, the first question asked is, can they win the Triple Crown? I think this horse could, in fact, win the Triple Crown. Will he? Probably not. But I think there's a legitimate chance that he could. He's likely to face 9 other horses at the Preakness. Todd Pletcher, great horse trainer, often ships in late to Pimlico when he runs a horse in the Preakness, but he decided to go earlier than usual because of the aggressive behavior Always Dreaming is displayed in the mornings the week leading up to the Derby. He didn't want that again. He believes taking him straight to Pimlico rather than to Belmont Park where he is now would minimize some of the change. He said, always dreaming is going to gallop up to the Preakness, no workouts in between. Interesting. Nobody knows that horse better than Todd Pletcher. Fun storyline to follow there as well. I love the Crippled Trans Stakes. See, there's so much to talk about. One of those days where an hour just is not enough. Do not forget tonight, the Jazz Warriors Game 4 set for 7 o'clock. David Locker on Boone will bring you the play-by-play call at 6:50. I will catch you tomorrow, same time, same place. We'll be joined by Emory High School baseball coach Sean Olton. I want to thank Coach Troy Winter for taking out the time, and of course, Brian Mejia as well. I'll catch you tomorrow. Be safe. I am out.